Hello and welcome to another episode of the Construction Corner Podcast. I'm Dylan. I'm your host, joined today again by my blue collar badass. Guys, we do this show because we want to help the commercial construction industry. You guys know that there's a lot of issues throughout the industry, that there's a lot of problems, that every job has its own heartaches, trials and tribulations as you go through the process. But personally, having done $750 million worth of commercial construction projects, it is our duty to pass on what we've learned to you guys. Matt's done hundreds of millions in the commercial construction world in projects as a general contractor, and then, you know, doing design build projects and the whole pre-construction phase of projects. So we bring a ton of knowledge from both sides of the table to you guys for free so that you can learn from our mistakes, our sometimes boneheaded moves, so that you don't have to make the same. But without further ado, Matt, how's it going, man?
Doing pretty good, man. 2 weeks in a row. This is a record over the last 6 months, I think. So I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to jinx it. I'm glad to be here, sitting across the screen from you. But yeah, guys, as Dylan mentioned, to echo that, we're bringing you a ton of value here for free. Do us the solid and share the damn show. Help us spread this message around. Help us continue to grow what we're doing. And we will continue to pop back on here every Tuesday and share with you all the nuggets and little bits of wisdom that we've both collectively learned over literally decades of doing this day in, day out. We just need a little help pushing it around.
Yep. And even if you just scroll down on your podcast app and give us a 5-star review, that would be awesome too. Without further ado, today we want to talk about talent and why all of you pretty much suck at getting great talent into your organizations. And it's not because of you, honestly. It is because of most likely your HR department. So, and for all you HR people out there that are listening, you should perk up now, because dude, it's bad. It's so bad. Like, everybody has a talent shortage, and yet nobody can get back to the people that they interview, that they reach out to, that they recruit with, right? Like, short story. So one of the guys that used to work for me is looking for basically a new company to go work for, licensed engineer, all that kind of good stuff. And it's like, good for him, man. Like, he got his license. He needs someplace new to go work on different types of projects. And with that, he's reaching out to all sorts of different firms. I'm like, man, just go see what they all have to offer. Like, there's different verticals, different companies do different things. Like, you know, do you want to do healthcare? Do you want to do industrial projects? Do you want to do a mix of both? Do you want to do, like, what do you want to do? And just go talk to all these guys. Like, there's no harm in doing that. You got to see what's out there and then see how they work, see who you like, see who you want to go work for. And one firm that he went and interviewed with, I think the interview went well. Like, it was fine. And actually, for all the firms that he's gone to, the interview experience was similar. He liked all the guys, you know, liked what they talked about, thought they all went pretty well. But one firm, and they're doing like $50 million a year, you know, pretty good size engineering firm, like, couldn't get back to him. And they were like, well, they, you know, our recruiter was at a conference. And he's like, they couldn't shoot me a fucking text. Like, they couldn't tell me that, hey, we're going to get you an offer. I'm at a conference. It'll be, you know, next week or whatever. Like, no follow-up whatsoever to just let him know, like, hey, man, we liked you. We're going to get you an offer. It's going to take a few days or whatever to, once we, I'm back from this conference, we'll get it to you. And it's like, and to make matters worse, it's an internal recruiter, not even an external, like, person to the firm. So this is representing that firm in hiring him, and they couldn't get back to him. He's like, I'm going to go. Well, they knocked down a couple spots.
Sounds like a really good way to lose out on a good candidate. And I'm glad you brought up recruiters, because if you didn't, I was going to fire that other shot across the bow, because in my world, we don't have an HR department per se. We have, you know, a consultant that we bring in when it's time for the Grim Reaper to visit certain meetings. But our recruiting that we don't handle internally with our core group is now, we rely on honestly one very special, very awesome recruiter that I'm hesitant to even share her name, because I don't want her to get too busy that she can't work with us. She was a direct referral to me from our friend Scott Pieper. And she's been great. We actually have our first hire coming on board in a couple weeks through her. But outside of this specific recruiter, 99% of recruiters are dog shit terrible. And it's the same thing. They don't communicate. They don't care, first of all. I mean, that's really what it boils down to. And I think that's a good spot to kind of swirl the beginning of this conversation on with HR or outside recruiters, is they really don't care, right? If you gave a shit about the people that you're talking to and talking with and about, like you said, just shoot a text, just drop a quick DM, quick email, whatever it needs. But most of them don't care. They're just solely making that money by volume, and it's whoever picks up the phone is going to get it and move on to the next one. If I counted how many recruitment calls I get in a normal week, that and companies offering to do estimating for me, it'd be off the charts, man. I couldn't even imagine. It's in the hundreds weekly. It's gotten to a point where it's just insane. And the recruiters, we've gone down that road at the construction company with a few different ones, and you take the time to really try and build this avatar of your perfect employee, right? And you take the time to really help the recruiter get to know you, or at least you think. And then if they send anything, I can't say what I want to say, but a lot of them don't even speak English. A lot of them have nothing to do with what we've talked about or what we do, you know, and it goes on like that. And it's just an utter lack of communication all across the board.
Dude, it's so bad. Well, like, I've never let HR handle a single one of my hires ever. Like, never. And when I was hiring interns at my first company, because I would go back, because so my, like, Rose Holman was a great school. They did a ton for me. They helped place it. Like, our career services just got put in the top 10 of all universities in the country. Like, they've done a really great job at putting students out there, helping kids get jobs, like doing that whole thing, right? Being great to companies and helping kids like with their resumes and all that kind of stuff, right? Like, really a world-class organization, not to mention it's the best engineering school in the country. So, and it has been for like 25 years. So with that, I always went back for career fairs. Like, if the firms I was working for were looking for interns, it's like, hey, like, I'll go represent the firm at my alma mater and go talk to these kids. Like, you know, well, some of the time I was a kid too, right? I was like 24 going back for some of this, you know, 23. So, like, yeah, like, I'm a kid going back and soliciting other kids to come work for me, right? Like, I'm 3 years removed from it or whatever. But at the same time, like, I felt that was my way. Like, I wasn't donating big checks, like, or anything like that, but that was my way to get back to the school, is like, go and recruit these kids and give them a summer internship, and some of them got full-time jobs and all that kind of thing. And so with a lot of this is like, I handled all of that. Like, we interviewed them. I, you know, for the mechanical guys, I was like, hey, here's five candidates that I think would be really good for the department. For, you know, electrical, I was like, hey, you know, boss, here's whatever, three, five, seven kids that I think would be a good fit. You know, it's now in your hands, right? And however you want me to help, like, let me do that. And the same when I went and recruited people and hired them directly into the firm, was like, hey, this is what we're offering. Like, I'm going to be in contact with you. Like, yes, I need to loop HR in, and they've got to do, you know, HR's got to present the offer letter, but I'm like in parallel talking to the recruit, because why would I let them go, you know? Or let, hey, HR didn't get this to you. Like, now I can internally do that. You know, it's got to come through that channel, but I can have still direct conversations. Like, why would I not have direct conversations with the person that's going to be working for me? And I think a lot of the time it's like, oh, you know, we had a good interview. I'm going to tell HR or whoever's running the recruitment process to, like, hey, we need to give this guy an offer, whatever. And then they remove themselves from the process. It's like, why would you remove yourself from the process that you're going to be, like, you're going to be this guy's boss? Why would you now remove yourself from the hiring process? And he feels like you don't give a shit, right? Like, you're stepping off on the wrong foot through this whole thing. Like, you clearly don't care. So why would I come to work for a guy that doesn't give a shit about hiring me in? Like, that's how you're starting this whole thing off. Then not to mention training and the rest of it, but it's like you're just relinquishing control of your department and you expect like eight, because HR has no incentive for like this guy to work out in your department. Like there's no, they're not working with them on a daily basis. Then they're back to like dealing with insurance, you know, negotiations or some other bullshit that nobody really cares about except once a year, you know, like what the, why would you let this candidate just hang, you know, like what the hell?
There's a ton to unpack there. And, you know, this is where the difference I think comes between in-house human resources and recruitment to external third-party recruiters. Most of the external third-party recruiters, except for my awesome ninja, they don't give a flying shit. They get their fee no matter whether the person works out. They could show up for a day, they could show up for 15 years, it doesn't matter. They're going to get their 15, 20, 40%, whatever the market's holding. And if the person doesn't work out, even if it's within a month, they couldn't give a shit. You call them and some of them will say, oh, that's really sucks. We'll place another candidate free of fee. You're not getting a refund. They'll place another one. And then you're back in the queue. Most of them don't even do that. And they just, well, we can get you somebody else. And I've been through this personally numerous times, especially when I was at a previous firm when we had an HR department, but we were largely in charge of recruiting and hiring ourselves. So we went out, we threw some bones around with some of the bigger recruitment firms locally. And we had, I don't know, when I was there, at least three or four that came in that, you know, we've talked about interviewing before, and it's different on the engineering and design side, I think, than on my side, because on my side, it doesn't really make a shit of difference to me what your degree is in or if you even have one, right? And there's no PE certification or stamp that I have to have. So our talent pool is much broader, I think, but because of that, we also get a way broader range of actual candidates. And, you know, you can sit down with somebody and I used to take them out for beers back in the day and like try and needle down to really get to know someone, but doesn't matter how much you do that, you know, the interview process can't last more than two, three interviews, or these people just lose interest. And so you rely on the recruiters to kind of ask all those questions ahead of time to build the picture for you of who you're going to be looking at, who you're meeting with. And most of them are just garbage at even doing that. You know, we talk about retention. What a terrible way to start that relationship. Like you just mentioned, right? If they bring you someone who's just shit and I don't pick up on it. I mean, and I say that in kind of in jest, right? The people who come in the door, like they at least know how to speak English and they have a pulse and usually they have some bit of background in construction. And so I don't just like throw them out, right? If they make it to the interview number two, I have a certain expectation that at least they have the potential of maybe working out somewhere in this firm. But if I were just to duck out at that point in time, you look like an asshole and you lose that relationship capital that you start building the very first time you talk to somebody. And so when the recruiters do that or the HR department does that, it really puts a tarnish on the beginning of what could be a beautiful relationship. It could be a very productive engagement between both parties, right? Between new employee and employer. But anything you do to stain that in the very initial bits is going to set you up for failure, right? It's the law of first impressions. And if your first impression is, well, I'm just a number in this machine, why would you ever stay and give it your all, especially in today's market where you can literally go anywhere you want and probably have a job within a week, and that's being generous. You know, it doesn't leave you a lot of motivation to really dig in and be a member of that team.
Well, think about it on the flip side, right? We're coming at it from like the all-stars that you want to hire, right? The kick-ass people you want on your team, right? And you just, the recruiter fucked it up for everybody, right? So one person like couldn't get back, couldn't be timely, even if they had a lot on their plate. and like this is what you get paid for. So now you messed up that great recruit. So the only people that now get through the process are the people you don't want on your team. So then you have a bunch of shit. Now you're going to, because in construction, like we are the product, right? Like we are what we're selling. It's, you know, we don't have widgets, right? Like you're buying the same plywood and lumber and steel as the next guy. Like we're selling the same shit. Like who we are is the product. And so when you go down the path of like, well, now your team's a bunch of losers who don't care if people get back to them, who don't care that, you know, a recruiter took another week. They're like, yeah, this guy really doesn't care about me, but that's actually going to be great because I really don't want to work. So I don't want him up my ass, you know, making sure that projects get done. So then you're going to like, now you're just with a shit team of shit people doing shit projects for shit clients. And then you wonder why your life sucks. And it's like, well, you know, it starts with like following up with people and caring and like giving a shit. So when we start there, you know, then you can attract great people. You can have great people work for you. You hold them accountable. You get back to people quickly. Like all this type of stuff. Like yesterday, man, I was in meetings and traveling and had all sorts of shit going on. And I responded to an email. It was like 9 o'clock at night. Like, hey, my bad, man. Apologies for getting back to you. Like it took me 12 hours to get back to you, but like, I'm going to look at this first thing in the morning and I'll get you an answer. And cool. Right. Like everything worked out, but it was, you know, hey, I understand that it took me a while to get back to you, right? 12 hours, heaven forbid, it's, you know, not two, but like all that stuff. Like I got back in a timely manner to them, like let them know, hey man, I'm sorry, I'm traveling, and here we go. So a lot of this is like just easy communication and remember to follow up. Like, hey, I saw this. Hey, I'm going to get to it. Here's when I'm going to get to it. Here's when I'm going to have it back to you. And simple things like that. But again, in construction and engineering, and it doesn't matter, like your side of the fence, GC or engineer, like you are the product. And so building a great team, a great set of people, giving great solutions, like that is what we're building. And if you can't attract great people, this also is like, I'm going to put this out there and just let it sit, is like, this is why you do content, why you tell people who the hell you are, what you stand for, why you're here, so that all that precursor stuff that you're talking about of like who we are as a firm, what we do, like just go listen to these podcasts and you can pretty much understand who the hell I am, what I stand for, what I care about, what I don't. And you're going to have a pretty clear idea of what you're going to get coming to work here. Right? Like it's that simple, but most of you guys won't even post on LinkedIn. So
I love that you went there. And I'm kicking myself now because I always talk about this with prospects and new clients, and that what we're selling, kind of like you just said, we all stack bricks the same fucking way as everybody else, right? We put on roofs the same way as every single other contractor in the country. What we sell and what differentiates us is the experience from soup to nuts of the whole process. And I've never converted that backwards to what we're selling internally, right? That's what we can sell to new hires, to recruits, is our culture, the experience of working on our team. So I'm taking that. I'm going to start using it now because I love it, but it's 100% true. If you can't create something that people want to be in and want to in it, that charges them up and makes them excited to do more and motivates them, then you're failing as a leader. You're failing as a recruiter. You're failing as all of these things. And you'll have this bland, run-of-the-mill, mediocre company that never amounts to shit. And that's what a lot of them look like. I've worked at some before, right? And it's more than, you know, putting a poster on the wall with your core values and saying, hey, new guy, look at this. Or, hey, client, look at how great we are. We have these values. And then you forget about them the second you walk past the sign. It's living those values and it's living and breathing that culture into your organization. It starts at the top, but if you can't, I'm going to say force it, but you got to make them willfully accept it. But if you can't force it down the ranks to everyone, you're failing as a leader, and you'll never get that cohesive team. You'll never get that almost automatic recruiting that happens in the really great firms, right? The really great firms by and large, have talent attracted to them. You know, they might use recruiters here and there or their HR department for help and assistance, but you know, we live in this electronic day and age where, like you just mentioned, there's podcasts, there's social media posts, there's websites, there's all these things that you can go and find a great company all by yourself. You don't need to hire someone on a commission basis to do so for you. And but you can't reach those upper echelons of the industry, of the companies that are just this enigma. They're like a black hole. They're sucking all the great talent into them because they represent such a great and unique aspect that nobody else has. You have to build it and you have to live it.
Oh, dude, like building the engineering firm now, right, and starting to do that side of things as well as the software side. Once I start to hire talent and bring people in, like it's for me in my hiring, because I've done so well in the people that I've led or been around, it's going to be text messages first. And more likely than not, you know, if it's within the next, well, the guy that I would want is probably going to take another job. So like, I'll give him a year at his next place before I take him, but it'll be a year and it'll be like a text and it's like, hey, you ready? Like that's going to be the thing. And it's not going to be a negotiation of like what he wants. It's like, what, I understand what the ballpark of your salary is. I understand I'm and willing to pay it. Like, and he knows that coming to work for me, like he will learn, right? This is why he left the first place, to your point, in building people. What are they going to learn when they're going to come work for you? Will they get better? And will they be able to grow a career with you? It's really that simple. You know, like the reason he's leaving is his boss doesn't give him any time, can't help him grow. And he probably hasn't grown much in the last 5 years because he gets paid no attention to from the department head. So like, what are you going to do if you're stagnant in your career? You're going to leave. And so like, and then if I, outside the pool that I have, like their phone numbers, I don't want to text and be like, hey, you want to come work for me? Outside of those people, I'm going to make a post on LinkedIn. And whenever that happens, I'm sure I will get 15, 20 people to want to come work for me. Like, that's how simple this will be at that point when I'm there and want to bring people on. You know, like it's really that simple, but it's, I've also built this over years. Like, I've done it purposely. And for all of it, like, you know what you're going to get with me. Like, it's a lot of personal development. I will help you with your career path. I will, you know, make sure that you're doing all your stuff, but I'm also going to check your work, you know, like we're going to make sure that you hold a standard and you can do what you say you're going to do. It's really like, I think people make this more complicated, but more so they don't take responsibility for any of this process. If you just took responsibility for the success of your people, none of this would be hard.
Yeah, without any argument, that's exactly it. You have to take responsibility for everything. As a leader, you have to take it all on your plate because it is all on your plate. You can't put food on the plates of others unless you're bringing everything in to create or kill or, you know, make that food. And you know, we've talked a little bit about being vocal and active on social media, and I have the same policy now. I used to be very nervous about putting anything out there, really before you and I met. I mean, I was pretty quiet on social media, so you know, people might not know who the hell I am coming into this. Now, it's a open book, dude. You've seen behind the curtains on almost everything I am and everything I do. So my right-hand man at the construction company, it makes him cringe to this day when we're in an interview with somebody and they say, oh yeah, I listened to the podcast or I saw you on LinkedIn. He's like, God damn it. He hates it, but it does something, right? It provides a precursor. Like if you don't like my attitude, my politics, my language, you're in the wrong fucking place because you're not going to change it, especially as a new guy coming into my firm. So it's, you know, it's like a pre like a pre-interview interview where I don't have to speak directly to them. They can hear everything I'm about. And that's the difference between where we're at, you and I, and the way we run our firms, and where so many other people are. There's so much fake bullshit still. And it's what I just talked about. It's the same guys that have the single poster of the core values on the wall who couldn't recite them unless they're fucking looking at it, who don't know what it means outside of a sales tactic, right? It's shallow and it's use like it's flatlining. My first form trainer, Jeremy, has a great saying in that if you get a flat tire while you're driving somewhere, you're not going to get out of your car and shoot a bullet hole through the rest of the three fucking tires, right? You go on and you move on and you go to the next best thing. You find a spot where you can stop and fix it. And it's the same thing with a career. If you wind up in this flatline, bland soup company, you won't stay there for very long. And if you do, you're one of those few who you deserve it, right? But, like you said, let them sit and stew there for a year. And then all it takes is that text message. And you already know, like, there will be negotiation on numbers, but it's within pennies, right? It's such a minor range because he needs, you know what you're offering, and you both know this is the right fit.
I'll do you one better. He would take less money to come work for me.
A lot of people do that.
I've
A lot of
already,
people will.
I already had that conversation with him. Like, I didn't even prompt him. I was like, dude, what do you want? Like, in whatever, 6 months, a year, like, one, how quickly are you looking to quit? And then two, like, hey, we're starting this. But like, the whole conversation was like, dude, yeah, go. If whatever reference you need, man, I'm happy for you. Like, and now with the offers and stuff he's getting, I'm like, shit, man, play them against each other. What the hell you got to lose? Like, this is how the game's played. Play it well. But like, also don't be in a hurry. Like, make a good decision for you. And I think, when people get pissed off at the companies they're working for, I mean, this is me calling myself guilty about this, but like, you're just like, fuck it, I am done. I'm out. Like, where are we going? And you make rash decisions. Like, I don't regret any of the things that I've done, but it's just like, I could have done that better, right? I could have gone through that process better. I could have gotten more money out of them, right? I could have put better terms in the deal, but I was just in such a hurry to get out the door that a lot of it, just could have been executed better, right? Was the position, all the stuff I did right for me at the time? Absolutely. Do I regret? None of it. But, in this process of like moving, because it's a big decision, for most people to move a job, to move a career, to make a different choice. And at the end of the day, you got to look at them as people. And I think sometimes that just gets forgotten, right? It's a number, it's a spreadsheet, it's a, does this work? And when you add a great person, it's not 1 + 1 = 2. It's like rock star equals 10, like that's the type of person you want to look for. And I think through all this, right, you got to stand on your core values. You've got to be who you are. And at the end of the day, like, it's just not that hard, man. And I've been on this same train for 20 years, like, most of this shit is not hard. You do the right thing by people. People will do right by you. And you play it out over a long enough time horizon, like, I'm pretty sure First Form doesn't have to advertise their hiring,
No, not at all. So we're coming up on time, Dylan. So I want to flip the script real quick here before we wrap it up and go focus on the recruitee side, right? The person looking for a job. And I'm going to throw a couple things out there and I want to hear your take on it. So number one is the job hoppers, right? We see a lot of that nowadays, especially where guys have been at a different firm every year for the last 10 years or something along those lines. They might have 10 years cumulative experience in the industry, but it's been with, 5 to 10 different firms. In my book, that's a big red flag, unless they can explain very succinctly why that is, because there's things that happen. But when you see that repetitive, okay, here for a minute, then boom, gone. Here for a minute, then boom, gone. My gut always says, all right, they're chasing a dollar. They got offered, $5 more an hour or 10 grand more a year or whatever it is. So, and that's where I go, right, wrong, or indifferent. The other thing, remind me, we'll come back to the other thing. I want your take on the job hoppers first.
Two takes on it. One is what's their age, right? So a guy like, so let's just take me for example. You looked at my resume prior to Cowabunga Studios, you'd have been like, this guy moves firms every 2 years, right? That's what I did, you know, but it was like, well, I worked for the my first company from intern at my sophomore year to like 2 years after graduation. So I was basically there for 5 years. Then I took another place, was there for 2 years, got my license, and then got my MBA like simultaneously, and then took a job as a department head. Well, it's like somebody would have had to, and this is how I always say it. It's like my boss would have had to either die or retire or stepped aside for me to take that position. And you just hired a 35-year-old dude when I was 25 to basically come and take over the department. And then he would have had to die or retire in the next 10, like there's no spot in there. And then I stayed there for 2 years to basically go to another firm, which did pay me like 20% more because, like, and nobody treated me like I was going to stay there forever. Like, you know, now the firms had changed and stuff, but like, so I could have made some moves, but it was like, you looked at mine, it's like every 2 years, right? I can't explain it. It is a pretty linear thing, but like, you look at a guy in their 20s. So if you're hiring a guy that's 30, right, has those 10 job hops. And as we just went through, most firms suck, right? They're trying to find a good firm. And if most of the firms, and we know it, that they suck, it's like there's part of that where they don't know to stick through the thing, right? No one's ever told them, like, dude, every job is gonna suck, right? You just gotta stick through it. And so now with like Cowabunga, it's like I've learned that like shit just gets hard and you're gonna like deal with some bad shit at a firm, and nobody's told them, like, dude, you just gotta stick through this. It will get better. And they don't know any better. So that's one. Two is like, you just got to make the calls to every single place I worked over the last 10 years. And you'll see that it'll tell you pretty quickly. But I wouldn't necessarily write it off, especially if a guy's like 30. So the young side of it, I would not write it off. Now, if a guy's 50 and he's, and you see that like a 10 year of like, you know, between 40 and 50, now it's like, okay, well, what happened? You know, did you move states a bunch? 'Cause that could be a thing, right? Did you have to go take care of your parents or something? Did, you know, somebody get put in a home? Like, what happened, right? To have that to where I was living in, let's say, for even just use my state hopping, like I lived in Louisville, then my parents lived in Indianapolis or something. So I moved there, right, to take care of them. And then they died within 2 years of being there. And then I went back, like, I mean, whatever, right? This is like how some of those stories go. Then you moved back to Louisville because you liked it better, you know, and you'd stayed there for another 2 years. And then, you know, shit, my wife's family had an issue. So then I moved to Detroit and was there for 2 years. Like, so somebody in their middle age, those are the questions I would have is like, is it a family thing? Like, why did you move? Did you get divorced? Your wife kick you out? You couldn't be in that state anymore. So again, like calling the places they've worked is going to be a thing. And then see what happened before. Because what I see on a lot of guys' resumes, they work someplace for a long time, you know, 10, 15 years. And then they went in this cycle of like hopping somewhere because they had a good place. What more than likely happens when you go and look at it is ownership changed. Somebody bought out the company. The culture completely changed. They got fucked. And then they went somewhere else and they can't go back and find the fit that they had previously. So they're trying to now find that fit again to where they're in it. They've got their spot. And it's like they were, and part of that in the guys that are older is they had something that was good and comfy and they did the same shit for 15 years and they're trying to find that again. And that's when you'll see them like go through jobs. So that's my take on it. There's no, this is never going to be a cut and dry thing. You got to hear the story. You got to hear why. And then you will need to go and call every single reference at every, all of those companies.
So you just answered it perfectly. You gave reasons for all three, that all three of the examples of that I would consider still worthy of talking with. The young kid like yourself who has life-changing event. It's like insurance, right? You can only change insurance once a year unless you have certain life-changing events. Well, getting another degree, getting your PE, getting your MBA, those are all life-changing events. And especially in your world, right, where those certifications and degrees, they mean a lot. They mean real dollars. You're probably not going to get the same respect and bump at the firm that you started with when you get that degree as you would if you go somewhere else. That's just the reality of economics. So that's one. The older person, who's had to move around to take care of family and bounced around, but that, sure, explain that to me. That makes perfect sense. And the last one I really want to touch on, the middle-aged, career individual who has that long tenure up front, and we see that a lot, and it's sad because I guarantee you, I've heard the story you just said 15 times, and they had a good thing, and there was some drastic change that happened. It's usually, like you said, ownership or something along those lines, or these are a real common. The owner steps down and the owner's kid comes in and just shits the bed. And then they just bounce around floundering, trying to get back to that level where they like it. And that, to me, that's really actually pretty sad. It's a shitty representation of the times we live in. But even that, that to me is not such a turnoff. It's more so typically the younger generations who have been, who, and I'm saying very young, like within the last, since COVID, certainly, came into the professional world during COVID or right around COVID, and they have this very unrealistic expectation of wages versus experience, that has been brought on because of the labor shortage, the shortage of people coming into the construction world that we talk about and talk about and talk about. And it's these people, these kids, I'm going to call them that. They've got 3 years of experience in anything at all, and they want 150 grand to start. And they're serious. And the problem is, there are firms out there that will grab them up and will give them 150 grand because they can't care right now. They're too big, they're too top heavy, they've taken on too many commitments. So they'll give them an overinflated salary. But then what happens is, when the economy starts to falter just a little bit, those guys, those kids, are the ones that get cut first. And usually they're going to sit there and they're going to have their arms out like this, and they're going to have no idea what happened. And then when things correct and they go back looking for another job, and that 150 turns into 80, or 75 is all anyone's willing to give them because they still have no experience. Then they're sitting there with their thumbs in their asses, wondering what happened, wondering what to do. And they've literally now been condemned, unless they are the toughest of the mentally tough. They've been condemned to a career of mediocrity because they'll never find their way back to that golden ticket that they had, that they thought they deserved because of the bullshit we put them through based on everything that's going on.
Oh man, there's a lot in that. I'll try to be quick on this because I know we're up against it. So, you can't blame that kid, right, for taking that 150 grand. And I would
Can't.
like, it is what it is. So the flip side of that is, as an industry, we have to be, because that kid's just fetching coffee. He's being some shit guy on a big project, right? He's probably like engineer number four on a, $100 million project, right?
He's a breathing body.
Not learning shit. He's pushing paperwork, and they need him, and they can cover the cost, right, in those big projects. So the flip side of that is, we've got to, again, think of this as a service to the community. Like, hey kid, you might have that offer. You might be going to work for that job, and you're going to make that. You're also going to not be able to live within your means, right? You're going to spend way more than you do because you think you're a big baller and you're 21 and you don't know any better. And this was all of us, right? You go from drinking Busch Light, house water, to you're drinking, nice IPAs and all the other shit, right? Like, you're drinking top shelf liquor now instead of the bottom shelf. Like, it's $12 and I get a gallon of it. Fucking great. Like, but we've all been there, right? Like, I'm speaking from experience here.
Yeah, it's the NFL curse.
Yeah, man. And so, like, hey kid, you need to stack as much cash as you can. You need to live cheap. You need to drive a shit car. Like, you might get a nice one, but like, drive that thing into the dirt. You know, like you don't need the nice car. Again, this is all the mistakes I made, right? Like a BMW is going to cost you $1,500 anytime you take it to the dealer. You know, oil change is $500. Like just start, you know, count it up, right? Like this is how this shit works. Everything will break on that car. It is not real. Anyway, not to get on a I hate BMW tangent, but so one, that kid just doesn't know any better. They have no idea what's going on in the real world. Two, it is then our duty to educate them, just like I did to my buddy here, is like, hey man, like you need to develop skills. And he knows coming to work for me, like one, I work on a ton of projects. I will teach him everything I know, and I will give him all the requisite skills that if any point in his career, he wants to do his own thing or just run his own projects or whatever the hell you want to do, man. Like I'm going to support you. Like, yeah, it'll suck if you don't work for me, but at the same time, like it's an obligation for putting out great people into the world. So if we take it that way, and it's our responsibility to put great people out in the world, no matter how we interact with them, right? Whether it's in an interview, from this podcast, from the content we put on the internet, from the projects and clients that we have, you're going to act in much different congruity with who you are and how you move forward. So for that kid, like, look, you're going to need skills. You're going to get them here. Here's what we're going to teach you. We're going to teach you how to do, you know, RFIs and change orders and proposals. We're going to teach you how to, you know, talk to guys down the field. We're going to teach you how to lead meetings. We're going to teach you how to do all this stuff. You know, we're going to teach you personal finance because you probably didn't learn shit ever. Like, we're going to teach you about investing and how to put shit in investment accounts, like all the other personal shit that this other company may or may not have. But like, hey, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to help you. Here's how we're going to build you into the person that you need to become to be a great member of society, and that you can live through any upturn or downturn within the industry. Now, if you want to go chase the dollars now, cool, man. Like I'm not going to ever blame you, but here are the things that you're going to need to learn so that looking back 5 years from now, when they do get kicked in the teeth, they're like, well, man, that Matt guy, he was real with me. He was honest with me. And maybe they remember the conversation. Maybe they don't. Or like, hey, when I interviewed with Schaefer, they told me all this stuff, and man, I'm glad I did it. You know, and they have a good thing of saying like, well, Schaefer helped me out. You know, I didn't go work for him, but that's a better conversation in 5, 10, 15 years. You know, that kid now, you know, maybe he made it up the ranks and he's a, you know, a mid-level guy at the company and, you know, can do stuff right now. He's moving and shaking through the firm, right? He was a real, you know, go-getter. So to me, like, you're never going to compete with some of those salaries. Like, it's just not in everybody's bag of tricks, right? There's going to be a few guys that can do it, right? Your billion-plus-dollar firms can go and pay for talent. But for most of us, like, we got to do it on grit, tenacity, like love, care, affection, you know, training people, like pouring ourselves into them. And then at the same time, like not being mad that they leave and go do their own thing. Right. We all did it. So like somebody else is going to do it to us too, at some point. Like, you know, you teach them the stuff and you just, you know, wish them well on the way and try to not burn that bridge. I know it's a long-winded way of like saying, give a shit, but.
Well, to close it out, man, it hasn't happened to me yet, but I can tell you right here, mark my words on this podcast, losing an employee sucks. When you have to terminate an employee or an employee quits, it sucks. But to lose an employee because they're going out to start their own firm, even if they're going to be in direct competition with me, that would be a great fucking day for me. I would look at that and I would think, this is the affirmation that I'm doing what I do correctly, because I have instilled that culture in my firm that, hey, it, like you just said, it's what I did, it's what you did. You want to come and dip your toes in the water here and learn and really soak it up like a sponge. And, you know, now if it's in a year, that sucks worse, but a few years down the line, hey, do it, man. And you know, I'm going to compete and I'm going to crush you like I do everybody else, but I'll be happy for you at the same time.
It's just like, be a good dude, you know, like that's, I think the summation of all this is just be a good dude, care, you know, like in my early days, like I played too much of the short game. You know, what's in it for me? How do I get ahead? How do I do all this? But at the same time, like I did a lot of the right things too, without necessarily knowing that I did the right things. Looking back, I can say that, you know, I cared about guys. I paid attention to them. I met with them, you know, like I did a lot of the stuff. And so like, just on our article talking about like meeting with people, it's like, man, I did all that. Like I've always done it. And it's, you get those affirmations, but they never show up necessarily in the moment. They show up, you know, years later. So just be a good dude and shit goes your way most of the time.
You know what, brother? We should do a show on bad jobs we've had, because I talk a really good game now about how to do this, but I'm 44 years old. Okay. I worked at a job once for 4 hours. I'm not even going to get into that story today, but it'd be a good one for later on. So between the two of us, you know, that's what we're flexing here. That's what we have to offer with this podcast. We've been doing this game. We've been in this world for a very long time collectively. All we got is our experience and our knowledge, right? We're trying to pass that off in little bits of, you know, half hour to 1 hour chunks of knowledge. So there you go. Drop the fucking mic.